Good evening and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today, we have two guests. Our first guest is Salihu Dasuki Nakande. Salihu is a university lecturer and APC member and actually former APC youth leader in the UK. So welcome, Salihu. Our second guest is Dotun. Dotun is a management consultant specializing in international development and infrastructure finance. Now we'll be discussing three interesting topics today. First of all, we'll discuss the ruling of the Osun State Election Tribunal that has declared that actually Oyetola won the elections, not Adeleke. Secondly, we'll discuss the claims by Bola Ahmed Tinubu, the APC's presidential candidate, that some people are trying to sabotage him. I would like to know who those people are, and hopefully Phoenix, Dotun, and Salihu can tell us. And then thirdly, we'll discuss the drama surrounding Godwin Emefiele, the central bank governor. The House of Representatives have threatened to arrest him. So hopefully our guests can give us an insight into what is going on. But to our first topic, Osun elections. Phoenix, the judge said it is not time to booga, whatever that means. Do you know what booga means? But anyway, Phoenix, how has it become the case that Adeleke, who we thought won the free and fair election, has now been ruled to actually be the loser? Can you explain to us how this happened? So first of all, what is this booga that this judge is talking about? But more generally, tell us, how did we get here, Phoenix?
Hi, Michael. And hi, Dr. Ansali. Thank you for joining us this week. Hello, listeners. I mean, it should not be a surprise to any of our listeners that Michael is not very close to pop culture and obviously missed the reference to Kiss Daniel and the Buga and the Gololo. But yes, I mean, in Nigerian lingo, Buga means to show pride, or to, how do I put it, to be cocky, to, you know, express the fact that you have attained what you expected to get. And so, of course, it was a shock to many right-thinking people to see that in a judgment, a documented judgment by a senior member of the Nigerian judiciary. But I mean, to your question as to how did this happen? So we know that, of course, I mean, following the declaration by INEC that Adeleke had won the governorship, and of course, they issued him a certificate of return. Oyetola, who was the incumbent governor who was displaced, and of the APC, of course, petitioned the election tribunal, and they've been on the case since, is it June or July last year? And in the course of the case, there have been different submissions that have been made. Now, the crux, when one looks at the judgment, and let's not forget, the election tribunal had three members. So there was a chairman and then two other members. But the decision that was reached was a split decision. So in the sense that there was a dissenting view. So there was a different judgment by one of the justices. So you have two who were in favor of the judgment that was declared, and then one person gave his own dissenting judgment. The judgment that prevailed was the one in which the chairman basically said that Oyetola had been able to prove the case. So there were two things that they had put forward. One was that there was a forgery of Adeleke presented a forged certificate, I believe, for whether it be secondary school or something like that. But they said, while it is true that it is a forgery, he had other certificates, so they dismissed that point. The other point was that they had been overvoting. And overvoting simply means that the number of people who are accredited, who voted, exceeds the number of people who were accredited. And of course, this created a shock because everyone expected that now that we're using BVAS, the biometric verification and accreditation system, that should address a number of all of these issues. But what we have is that we have technology, and you also have a manual process working side by side. And as we all know, while technology can be a bit difficult to compromise, the manual process is always open to people who want to, you know, carry out nefarious activities. So what has happened in this case is you're seeing at the end of the process, the BVAS data is transcribed into what is called a BVAS report. So there's a written report that says the number of accredited people at that polling unit is X. That is written into a BVAS report. Then you have the voting report, I think it's called a Form ECA8 or something like that, that captures the number of votes that are counted. Now, of course, if those two don't match, then there's a problem, especially if you have more votes than the BVAS report. And that was what Adeleke was able to show using INEC's own preliminary report of the voting across Osun State. Now, bear in mind that INEC had said that this was a preliminary report. So the question before the court was therefore when INEC then presented, so that report showed that there was overvoting in over 700 plus polling units. Now, bear in mind that the whole of Osun State had about 3,700 polling units. So you're talking about 20% of the polling units were basically said to have had overvoting. And so what the judge then did was to say that because this report is showing this, we are going to cancel all of the results from those 700 plus polling units and recalculate. And when we recalculate, it shows that Oyetola had the majority of the lawful votes and therefore he should be declared the winner. And that was what he decided. I mean, there are a number of questions that have been raised. The first question for me was, when I heard that, was basically, how do you just simply wipe out 20% of polling units? I mean, that's too many people to disenfranchise. What should have happened, and I think it's also captured in the Electoral Act, is you basically go back and have a rerun. You ask them to run the polls again. But the other question, so the judge, I mean, it was a very strange judgment to give, to say, no, we wipe this away and we declare somebody else the winner. The other issue was that the INEC is saying that the report that Oyetola had, yes, it came from us, but that was the preliminary report before an audit and synchronizing the BVAS machines, because we expect to go through all the machines and make sure that what is captured in the report is correct. And that when they did that, what they found was not 700, it was 6 polling units. And based on 6 polling units, Adeleke will still have won the election. So this judgment is strange. So I think, I mean, when you juxtapose those positions, it tells you very clearly that there will be, obviously, Adeleke has said he will appeal. And so that dance will carry on. But I think the bigger issue for me is the fact that I saw this as a stalking horse, in the sense that, I believe, and I wait to see how this will play out all the way to the Supreme Court. But based on the facts, based on what we know, I expect that this will be overturned. But what it has done is to create doubt into a process that everyone thought was okay. Everyone thought before now that BVAS will solve a big part of that voter manipulation problem that we've always had, and this will create a level playing field. But if you've been able to create doubt that even the outcome of BVAS can be tampered with, that you can have a different number and somebody will deliberately record something lower in a BVAS report because the audit showed that, then it shows that we're not even, it's not yet Eureka for our electoral process. So that's the context, that's where we are, and we wait to see the outcome of the appeal. But more importantly, one looks to see how this impacts, voter belief in the system going into the February 25 elections.
Thank you, Phoenix. Before I go to Dr. Tuwa, I need to get some clarification on an issue, and I apologize if I'm sounding a bit unintelligent. So if the BVAS system accredits the voters before they vote, isn't there a way from that system to be able to tell who are the actual authentic voters and then identify them from those ballot sheets and then do a count on that basis? Is that not possible?
It is possible. It is. It's a great question. I do not think so, because a ballot paper doesn't have any identification, to my mind. I mean,
it should have the fingerprint, doesn't it? It should have the fingerprint.
The BVAS system, well, true. So yeah. So okay, that's a great point. Yes, you can match fingerprints, but that's going to be a long and arduous process. You can match fingerprints on the ballot paper to the fingerprints in BVAS. So yes, you can use that to validate the legal votes that have been cast. So yeah, it is possible.
Okay, because I'm starting to understand how, then what's the point of BVAS if you validate the voters, but still anybody can just turn up and vote anyway, and then there's overvoting, and therefore you cancel everything, and there's no way to decide which of the voters.
But that's the point. You shouldn't cancel everything. The point to BVAS is, because it's a biometric accreditation system, BVAS should be the authenticator of how many people should vote in this place. Because BVAS comes preloaded with the number of people that are registered for that polling unit. And it will capture fingerprints or whatever biometrics for everybody that is supposed to vote. So you're supposed to go through BVAS to get a ballot paper and vote. So BVAS would be your fallback position when you've counted the votes. So if I count votes and it's showing us 900 people voted, and I come back to BVAS, I must see 900. So that's the thing. So BVAS is useful in that regard. That was what Oyetola relied on. He's saying the BVAS report is telling us something and voting. So that's what.
So I suppose my final question on this then is, if BVAS only accredited, let's say, 100 people, who then issued ballot papers to people who had not been accredited? Because my understanding is you get accredited and then you get a ballot paper. So if people had not been accredited, who gave them ballot papers?
But the interesting thing, Michael, is that, yes, that's a possibility. But the other thing that we also learned from an audit that was done is there was a deliberate recording of lower numbers than what was in the BVAS machine. So I'll give you an example. One of the guys that audited the systems said there was a machine that had 388 people in the BVAS machine. But when you look at the BVAS report, it recorded 313. So there were 75. So it was like so you can imagine that it was deliberately recorded lower, because if you take the from the voters form, you probably will find 388 voters. So the manipulation is in multiple ways. One is, stuffing the ballot box with additional papers to invalidate the polling unit. The other is, because we now have BVAS, you record something different in the BVAS report, lower than the BVAS number, so that when you then take that report, because nobody is going to go back, unless you insist, nobody is going back to the BVAS machine, you just take the report forward. So if you now take that report that is showing that it's a lower number to actually what was voted, then it invalidates the polling unit as well. So the manipulation is in a number of places. So it's an interesting case. So the question now becomes, because the tribunal refused to accept the follow-up report after the audit, will the higher courts accept it? And if they accept it, of course, it will show up that there would, I mean, the issue that these guys ruled on is incorrect.
Okay, no, thank you, Phoenix. Dotu, I need to bring you in at this point. The general consensus after the vote in Oshun was that it was free, fair, and that the will or the democratic will of the people had been done. And it was on that basis that a number of people were being encouraged to come out to vote in February. They're being told that, look, this Beaver system is safe, it's secure. Your vote for the first time in a while will count. So are there any concerns that this court's ruling is going to demotivate or demoralize potential voters, Dotun?
Thank you, Michael, and good evening, everyone. Good to be here again. There are definitely major concerns. You know, just going off piece for a little while, I watched the Brazilian elections and talked to a number of Brazilian friends, and I was thinking, we need fully electronic voting in Nigeria. I mean, you know, you don't even have it in the UK. There are a lot of countries that can learn from this. The Brazilian elections, you know, it was very quick. We're kind of halfway there. And it is a shame that the Beaver system has been somewhat undermined by these events. Without prejudging things, I lean towards Michael's view, and I thought that was an excellent summary of the technicalities, which again brings a problem because explaining that sort of thing to the man in the street is quite difficult. I think there are, you know, the tribunal potentially jumped the gun because you've got a report which is a preliminary report. You know, for them to proceed on that alone seems a little strange to me. I'd love to actually read the dissenting judgment to see what the member had to say. I totally agree with Michael that, you know, you wipe out 20% of votes just like that is hugely damaging to the process. So we're kind of halfway there. In one sense, the system has proved to be useful because it provides good evidence. It has highlighted one flaw, at least one flaw here, which is that human error or human dastardly deeds can still have an effect in that somebody can record a lower number as a way of discrediting the electronic count. But that is something which, now that we're aware in practice, you can watch. So it's very much a trial run ahead of the main elections. So from that point of view, it is useful. So this election is what you might call a curate's egg, good in parts. I think it will probably go all the way to the Supreme Court. I mean, these guys mustered more lawyers and senior advocates, particularly, than I've had hot dinners. It was quite amazing to see the array of legal firepower. And I do find it interesting, although it's the lesser point, that the issue over Adilike's certificate was you know, ditched, because from a legal point of view and my first degree is in law, I tend to think that, you know, that's a breach of the law. And frankly, he ought not to have been standing. You know, I don't care how many certificates he has post that. If he's submitted a forged certificate, that should rule him out. But that's another issue. So to sum it up, I think you're quite right. The elections appeared free and fair. It's very important to convince the man or woman in the street that their vote will count. They can turn up without fear or favor, cast their vote without having to worry about thugs, and, you know, see a result which they can say, hand on heart, reflects, you know, they can safely say, well, what's published here, the result that's published, I can rely on it. And this does sow a seed of doubt. But overall, I think it's probably a good thing, because this particular potential human intervention, by highlighting that, it is something that all parties can look into, including INEC and the and politicians. We can look into, and it's something election observers can also watch out for when it comes round to you know, the elections coming up, particularly the presidential. And I will watch with great interest the particular point about the preliminary report, because they will produce a conclusion. They will produce a formal final report. And that's got to be whiter than white, because it's going before the court. So that's my two Pennyworth.
Thank you, Dr. I just wanted to get some clarification on the second point, which is you talked about Adeleke's certificate. So just to clarify, so are you saying that the court actually agreed that he had forged the certificate, but it wasn't relevant because they felt that he was still qualified by his overall education? Is that what you're saying?
Michael will probably be better. Phoenix will offer you more information on this. But my understanding, excuse me, was that the court accepted that he was a legitimate candidate. They didn't, I think, really examine the point. I don't think it was so much the court saying, you know, one forged certificate, we can ignore that. I think it's more the case that they were saying that INEC were satisfied that he was that he qualified as a candidate. You know, obviously there is a, you know, that certificate issue, and it's very relevant when we consider one of the parties standing in the presidential election. But I think it was more a case of they didn't really want to go there. I think they wanted, the tribunal wanted to focus more on the number of votes cast, etc., etc. They didn't want to refight that battle because there have been lots of issues. I mean, you know, hearing about this certificate, it's not the first time we're hearing about this. I think they just wanted to take it at face value that INEC had ruled on this. However, I would be very surprised when this reaches a higher court that the other side, Oyetola's lawyers, do not still hammer the point home. If they can prove that the certificate is forged. And I haven't examined the statute, but if there is any, if the statute is very clear about registration, well, it could have serious implications. But as I said, I would slightly defer to Phoenix on this particular point, because I suspect that he has looked into it in rather more detail than I have.
Thank you, Dotton. Look, let me go to Salihu. Salihu, you're the APC party member here. You've heard what Phoenix and Dotun have said, and you've read the general commentary. First of all, there have been protests in Osun State because the people believe that the democratic mandate of Adeleke is about to be stolen. Secondly, you've heard the technical arguments pointing out that the INEC seem to be relying on preliminary data instead of the final data. So how do you respond to this, Salihu? Are you jubilating when you heard the ruling, or were you disappointed?
No, sorry, Michael, it was just a matter of time, you know. That dancing senator has been always desperate to rule over Osun State, and then they gave him the opportunity to go and dance for a temporary moment. The reality is what the PVS is actually playing. I don't understand what Phoenix is arguing about over there. It's simple. The PVS does the accreditation. If you have 20 people in this polling unit, the PVS will accredit. If it's 5 people that came, then if that's what PVS has accredited, then you should have 5 people accredited and only 5 ballot papers. Beavers is simply for accreditation. So what happened in Osun now is you go to a polling unit, for example, polling unit 001. Beavers accredits 30 people. But the ballot paper inside the box that was counted was what, 300. That's over voting. That was just the simple argument of the Osun case. It didn't go more than that. So now they brought out those numbers that the Beavers accredited. And then they took out all the other numbers of vote over voting. And that was the result that now took out what? Adeleke out of that the ruling that now did not favor him. When you look at these PDP rigging machines here, they think that this election that they are holding in Nigeria is 1999 election, so 2003. But Beavers is a goal setter. So when they went and they were advising the PDP in Oshun to go and rig and do whatever they wanted to do in Ede and the rest of the local governments, they didn't know that Beavers was there. So they were living in the past, but the reality has now hit them. His chances are very, very slim. He will not make it in appeal. He will not make it in Supreme. The Beavers has finished everything. And I guess with the case of the forgery, well, I guess the main motion they took was actually the overvoting, not even more of his forgery case. And why they said he was eligible to still contest for governor was because for governorship in Nigeria, the minimum requirement is a secondary school certificate. But on a normal day, that guy should even be in EFCC or ICPC for forgery. So that's the reality. So Phoenix saying that they would offer, no, they wouldn't. These chances are so slim. There was even an analysis that a lawyer even brought out. He even said the chances were even zero because of what the Beavers has done. But when it's about APC, people are just not happy. But if it's the other ones, the other parties, they say the rule of law. We had a governor that was preparing for his swearing in Bayelsa. The following day, they were going to swear him in. But what happened? Supreme Court gave it to Durodiri PDP. Everyone jubilated and said, oh, democracy is working. But right now, Yetola has just reclaimed his mandate the legal way. And then people are not happy about it. More importantly, it's even the Labour Party that is even complaining about it. But that's just the summary of the whole Beavers wahala. The dancing governor, he will dance for just a very temporary period. He can keep dancing, like I saw in the media today. He was dancing to Buga, but his days are numbered again. So that's basically it.
Thank you, Salu. I have two follow-up questions. So the first is, so you have no concerns that people can rig this election by simply ballot stuffing in their opponents' areas and getting the votes cancelled? So do you not worry that that's a way to basically discredit a whole election? That doesn't concern you, Salim?
Sorry, Michael, do you want to repeat that question again?
Yes, because my understanding of the rules is that in any polling unit where there's overvoting, all the votes are cancelled. So are you not concerned that people are using this as a means of rigging? Because if you go to your opponent's stronghold and deliberately pay for overvoting to take place, it means that all the votes in those areas are cancelled. Meanwhile, in your area where you're strong, nothing happens there and therefore you win. So
absolutely. No. So it just means now everyone should be transparent. Let the right things be done. If that's the way you want to win elections, then you see the implications in the future. So I don't see it as any issue per se. And then why are people scared? Then they should go and run the elections the normal way. Yeah, it's not a concern for me at all.
Thank you, Salu. Then my second question, the follow-up is, you talked about the certificate of Adeleke and how, I think you said in a normal society, he should be in jail for fraud or criminality because of his fake secondary school certificate. And the question people are asking is, does Bola Tinubu have a primary or secondary school certificate? Do you know where your own candidate, Bola Tinubu, went to school, Salihu?
Gigi, are we going, is that what the conversation is about now? Are we talking about Oshun, or you want us to now start talking about Bola Tinubu so that I know where we'll focus our energy on?
No, I was simply asking the question because you said anybody with any sort of cloud around their primary or secondary school certificate should be imprisoned. So I'm asking that shouldn't the same standard apply to Bola Tinubu, whom you support? That's the simple question.
Yeah, it should apply to him, but there are two conditions here. One of them is a competent court of law have found out that this is forgery. In the case of Bola Ahmed Tinubu, Gege, can you tell me any competent law, both in the United States and Nigeria, that have said Bola Ahmed Tinubu has forged his qualifications or his identity? If you tell me, then I'll tell you, I'll give you an answer. But if you don't have any evidence for that, but then there is no discussion here because there's evidence for this for the current governor of Osun State.
But do you know where Bola Tinubu went to secondary school?
Is there any evidence that he didn't go to secondary school or he didn't go to primary school?
Well, that's what I'm asking you. Do you know? It's either a yes or a no answer, Saliu.
Oh, yes, I know where based on the information out there, there is information of the school he went to.
So where did he go? Would you care to share?
Yeah, I'll share it to you. Just a minute. I want to get it. It's on his official website. Do I know it by name? Absolutely not.
Okay. So, whilst you're searching for that, I need to ask Phoenix a final question on this topic.
Sorry? All right, please. Yeah, you can ask Phoenix. Let me get the information out there.
Yes. So, Phoenix, truth be told, Salihu seems to have made a good argument that the issue is not beavers. Salihu has basically said, look, in every polling unit, if you accredit 50 voters, then 50 voters should vote. If there's more than 50, then you cancel the election. And truth be told, that seems like a reasonable argument. So the question is, if we're saying there must be 50 voters, but somehow the system recorded 100, then it seems to me that it should either be cancelled or somebody in INEC needs to take responsibility for the discrepancy in the number of accredited compared to the voters. Don't you agree, Phoenix?
Well, I do agree that someone in INEC needs to take responsibility for this disparity. After all, it is INEC officials who handle BVAS and reflect the reports and all of that. But we also know they're human beings. We also know that our election process is fraught with people who have a pecuniary interest. And so, I mean, we've seen this over time. So, I mean, we can't. The question is, when things go to the courts, the expectation is that the court will be a fair arbiter and ask for a validation of the source record. That's the argument that is being made. The court is refusing to look at the source record. Instead, the court is saying that the secondary record is sufficient because it was issued by INEC. What we're saying is, what a normal court should do is to say, the BVAS machine still exists. Let us appoint a court-appointed audit firm or whatever to go and audit the BVAS machines and show us exactly what was recorded in the BVAS machines, tally that against the voting record. If there is a discrepancy after that, then rule on that basis. Especially when INEC itself is telling you that the secondary record that you are relying on is not sufficient. We issued that preliminary report. We are giving you a final report, and you are refusing to accept our final report and saying, no, the first report you give us is all we're going to look at. We don't want to know what else you brought. It's absurd, especially for matters of this nature, especially for the magnitude of the issue in contention. We are talking about 20% of the electorate being disenfranchised. Surely the court must show reason that, look, let us make sure that we validate this point. And if indeed it is true that overvoting has occurred, the Electoral Act also says what? I mean, basically, you go back and run another election. You don't tell 20% of the people that we're sorry, because some people stuffed your ballot box, you don't get to have a say in who becomes your governor. That's the point that is being made. I don't know why that is difficult for any rational person to want to. If you are so sure, and we are both agreeing, And I'm agreeing with Saliu that, yes, Beavers should be the source record. So let's go and audit the Beavers machine and be sure that, yes, that what exactly was written in the report is correct. End of story.
Thank you, Phoenix. So before we go to our next topic, Beaver, Saliu, do you have Bola Tinubu's secondary school now?
Oh, no, I don't have it now, but I have his university.
Okay. Thank you, Saliu. So moving on to our next topic, Bola Tinubu, the candidate of the All Progressives Congress, has alleged that people, unknown forces, are plotting to sabotage his campaign. And seeing as Bola Tinubu is the APC's presidential candidate, I'm going to give Saliu the first word in this. Saliu, who are these hidden unknown forces plotting to sabotage Bola Tinubu's campaign, and how are they doing it?
Michael, you can see the realities. Since the progressive government came into this government, there was no way that you say that December, January, we're having four crises, university, and what all kinds of, I don't know, artificial challenges facing that country. All of a sudden, 2 months to the election. Now, if you even look at the realities of what's even happening now, look at when the train strike, the railways, people are tempering with the rail lines, you know, to make the government look bad. Then secondly, now let's even talk about this Naira note. If you've even had the stories in Nigeria, people are selling these new Nairas. Banks are not dispensing these new Nairas. There's a lot of inefficiency in the way the policy is being implemented, all to make the government look bad, to make our candidate look bad. It's evident there. And a lot of people are celebrating it, because it's painting a negative image on APC and the candidate. It's evident, and right now he has to talk. If people won't talk, he has to talk. That people are sabotaging. A lot of people sabotaging these activities are people that benefit from a country that's not progressive. Now we're trying to put this country in the path of progress. People have decided to take it back because they know Bola Tinubu will win these elections. That's just the reality. I don't even want to start talking about the CBN governor. I'm sure he's doing his own best, but if you look at the value chain towards the implementation of this new era, there are challenges on that value chain. Some people are sabotaging it. Some disobedient people are sabotaging it in order to make this government and the candidature of Bola and Tinubu to be affected.
Thank you, Saliu. I just want to ask a quick question. Who is the Minister for Petroleum, Saliu?
Who is the Minister of Petroleum is the President of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, President Muhammadu Buhari.
So shouldn't he be responsible for supplying fuel to ordinary Nigerians?
No,
is that not within his remit?
He's not responsible for supplying fuel to Nigerians, but rather he's responsible for managing the whole petroleum industry in Nigeria. But now moving on, there is upstream, there's downstream. Like I said, there's always a value chain in this supply. There's a supply chain out there. But when you have irresponsible people at some these different aspects of this supply chain, then you tend to have these challenges. You just simply tend to have these challenges. And that's what is happening. It's right now people started selling fuel because they've sent the DSS to them. People are holding this fuel. Yeah, it's available, but they're just holding it, making the government look bad. But we're looking. But I must also make it clear on this podcast, like I said every day, no matter how much they try to paint the government of President Muhammadu Buhari and the candidate of Bola Tinubu, we will win this election until a messiah comes from heaven. But if that messiah doesn't come from now until February 25, No matter what they do, there is no man born of a woman that will defeat this guy. Hold me to this on this podcast.
Thank you, Salihu. Let me bring in Dotun. Dotun, you're obviously a public policy specialist. So, in your view, is it possible that the responsibility for this fuel scarcity is nothing to do with the president, or that the failure to supply the new Naira notes is also nothing to do with the CBN governor, that these are the work of hidden forces, maybe demonic spirits, perhaps, working against Buhari's government? Is that your view, Dotun?
I'll start by Harold Wilson, when he was Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, going up until I think he retired in 1976 because of the onset of Alzheimer's, although it wasn't made public at the time. And he was very paranoid, and he saw plots all around him, both from the opposition and members of his own party. And I can't remember who it was, but somebody said, well, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean somebody isn't out to get you. And I think that certainly applies in this case. Let's take the petroleum issue first. Well, sorry, but the buck stops with the current president. He made himself petroleum minister. Not a very smart idea, but that's another story. Ultimately, yes, there is a value chain. There's a supply chain. There is a link of people with various responsibilities, subsidiaries of NNPC, the NNPC general group managing director himself. All of them bear some responsibility. But at the end of the day, Buhari chose to make himself Minister of Petroleum, and he has to bear responsibility for the problems. And I'm yet to see any kind of substantive, sensible explanation. I've seen lots of people whose opinions I respect asking the question as to why this is going on, why now, and why it's dragging on. And I'm yet to hear any decent answers from the government. And sadly, you know, look, noblesse oblige, you know, nobility imposes obligations. And if you put yourself up and you take up a public office, you know, the highest offices in the land, then you have to take some responsibility. This government's never been great at communicating with its citizens. And the truth of the matter is, Nigerians do love a good conspiracy theory, but if you fail to solve a problem, if you fail to explain why that problem has come about, and if you fail to come up with solutions, and you just don't communicate any of that, then it is no surprise that rumor, innuendo, conspiracy theories fill the void. So, you know, it isn't a surprise. Now, on the second thing to do with the Naira notes, where to start with that? I mean, there's a battle of wills here. The central bank governor has tarnished his reputation. There's no doubt about that. You know, the coming out as a member of a political party when you are still a public servant is decidedly dodgy. And it's nice to see that, you know, we haven't completely lost control of our moral compass in Nigeria, because the cries from people across the country were loud and clear that this is wrong. And the president, to be fair, did eventually come out and say, if you're a public office holder and you wish to run for election, then you stand down first. The sins of Godwin Emefiele are legion. No time to go through them here. You can question the timing of the change in the Naira, or what indeed it is designed to achieve. And again, I don't think the Ministry of Finance, Minister of Finance, well, we know she was in the dark anyway, or at least she claims to be, and the president himself, again, have failed to explain clearly, coherently, what they have done, why they're doing it, the timing, et cetera, et cetera. And that, again, you don't do that. You leave the door open to speculation. And the second thing is, of course, they have argued that there will be no extension of the deadline to exchange old Naira notes for new. Nigeria being Nigeria, I think people can say legitimately that, well, the infrastructure, you know, gets in the way. It's you know, maybe the banks aren't processing fast enough. There are rumors that they don't have enough new notes available to meet demand. And no doubt some people are going to be left holding the old currency. And I've seen statements to the effect that they won't extend the deadline. I've seen other knowledgeable people saying what they will have to for whatever reason. Again, communication is lacking. But to go back to your original question, having mentioned those two things, Bola Tinubu is saying that, you know, this is some kind of dark conspiracy against him. He hasn't named names. We're in election season. I think it's very normal for election candidates of whatever party to try and smear each other, but to also point the finger at other things. This election campaign, you know, of course, a big stone in the pond was the emergence of Peter Obi. So that has clearly, in my view, rattled both the main party candidates. They're not quite sure what effects it's going to have. It is interesting to see Bola Tinubu kind of come out with this woe is me argument and point the finger that, you know, he's been hard done by and almost paint himself as the underdog in this. The issues that we've highlighted, whether it's the fuel scarcity, the Naira notes issue, potentially affects every citizen. I don't see how it necessarily benefits any of the opposition candidates. Of course, Bola Tinubu will say that it's unfair that the finger's been pointed at the government. But I go back to what I said at the beginning, just before I conclude, which is to say that ultimately the buck stops with the incumbents. You are in office, you have responsibility for certain things. You cannot say, it's not me, there are others. Well, those others ultimately report to you. And it's your responsibility to solve the problem. And it's dragged on for quite a while. And as things stand, it looks like, you know, this scarcity will continue for quite a while yet. So let me conclude there and give others an opportunity to say their piece.
Thank you, Dotton. Now, Phoenix, there's a second angle to this drama, which is a number of political commentators have actually said Tinubu was attacking Buhari. That when Tinubu is referring to hidden forces, he's actually saying Buhari and people within Buhari's government are trying to sabotage his campaign because they don't want him to win. Is there merit to that argument, Phoenix, that Buhari is actually the one working against Tinubu?
I think it's hard to tell, although, I mean, there's enough to fuel that position in the sense that the two things that Tinubu complained about all point back to Buhari, i.e. this is based on things that Buhari ostensibly controls. Tinubu complained about the fuel scarcity crisis. As has already been discussed, Buhari is in charge of the petroleum ministry and obviously controls the NNPC, which, as we all know, controls fuel in Nigeria. I mean, whether we have fuel in Nigeria or not begins and ends with the NNPC, and that's Buhari's control. The other thing he mentioned is the currency redesign and the swap deadline that has been given. Again, we have clear evidence that the decision-making around that begins and ends with the president. Just today, the CBN governor released a statement extending the deadline for the swap. And he made it clear that he has received approval from the president to do so. So when one takes those two things, I mean, Tinubu was quite specific. So when you look at it in that prism, you're like, okay, there's some, you know, truth. There may be some truth to it. And if, I mean, if Buhari really wanted to address those two things, then, I mean, he can, because at the end of the day, he controls those two things. But the challenge we have is first of all, even understanding Tinubu's mindset. And that's been a challenge for me personally, in the sense that what does this sabotage really mean? Why would it be? See, is he looking at it from a perspective of creating all of these challenges going into the elections makes the current government look bad, and by extension, the APC look bad, and of course, the APC candidate look bad. He has said that he will carry on Buhari's work and try to inherit that mantle. So he has tried to tie himself to Buhari, even though in some other guises, his proxies and himself try to dissociate themselves from him as well, because of course, I mean, the Buhari administration has failed. There's no other way to define it. I mean, this all these issues that we are talking about, even trying to do this swap, which in itself is a good thing, but trying to do it within this timeline, within this period, speaks to a policy that was not well thought through. So does it look at it from the perspective of, I mean, this is making the party look bad, and of course, creating a more difficult, if my job of getting elected was already difficult, this makes it even doubly difficult? Or is it what people have insinuated, especially around the Naira redesign issues, that this creates a problem for him because he, as I've always said, he has no path to the presidency, and the likely possibility of him creating a path for him requires him to, you know, dig deep into his very deep pockets and try to enable vote buying and try to spend his way to the presidency. And so this particular policy comes at a time that frustrates that effort, and that's what he's lashing out at. Because otherwise, if you take what Buhari has said from the perspective of why are we doing this and why will I not turn back? It is because I want to leave a legacy of good elections. It's because I want to make sure that nobody can mobilize resources. His words, nobody can mobilize resources, thugs, money, blah, 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 to undermine the elections. I would expect that the APC presidential candidate will lean into that and say, yes, we want our party wants to give you free and fair elections. We've brought Beavers into play. We are also stopping the capability of politicians to, you know, undermine elections using money and all of those kinds of things. But he's not choosing to lean into that. Instead, he's calling it sabotage. So I think to your question around is Buhari, you know, if we see Buhari's insistence on trying to have free and fair elections as an attack on Tinubu, then that speaks more about Tinubu than it does about Buhari. But as I said before, that I mean, the two planks that Tinubu has called out, Buhari controls them. And so there, I mean, if there is something to be said about the fact that Buhari can make things better, we've already seen him authorize an extension of the deadline. So if he's insisting on doing it, maybe there is some truth in the fact that he's against it. And maybe that should tell Nigerians that if the current president is going after his own ally and party member, maybe Nigerians too should think twice before going to, you know, vote for the APC presidential candidate.
Thank you, Phoenix. I think it's time to move on to our third topic because of time. It still relates to this, Godwin Emefiele, the central the House of Representatives have threatened to actually arrest Claudine Emefiele because of this currency change policy. So let me start with you, Sarihu. Emefiele was appointed by, or reappointed by Buhari, and he's a core Buhari loyalist. So why is a House of Representatives made up of members of your own party threatening to arrest him? Can you explain to me why they can't just speak to the president and tell the president to get Emefiele to appear? Why this high-handed approach to governance? Sarihu.
Michael, I'm not sure this is has to do with any high-handedness, because the House of Reps and the Senate, these are all independent legislatures from the presidency, and then they have the right to call on the governor of the central bank to come and explain. He hasn't been to even the House of Representatives or the Senate House to even go and tell us what's happening with this Naira redesign. He has been avoiding the House. They've called him on several occasions. But that's the challenge you have when you have people that have served in the former government. And when they give them the opportunity to come and serve in the APC government, they tend to abuse those privileges. But this is a lesson learned, and it's just a matter of time. And I agree with the House of Reps. They need to call him to order. He should come to explain to us what's happening with this Naira redesign. Why are we not having them out in the markets, in the rural areas? People are really suffering. Our own Naira currency is in scarcity in Nigeria. People are selling it. A lot of people in the rural areas that don't have bank accounts or banked are suffering. You can imagine when you have a proximity from your village to the bank. I don't know what legacy is out there sitting, but this is a man that decided to run for the presidency and did not have the chance to win. And maybe he has his own agenda. I don't know. Maybe he's doing it for the sake of the country, which is good. But at least if you want to bring such policies, you should provide the right environment for people to return what they have. It's a good policy. People can return these Nairas in less than 100 days. I agree. But you need to give the right channel for them to do that. Has he provided it? Absolutely not. But time will tell with regards to Emefiele.
Thank you, Sarihu. Let me go to Dotun. Dotun, I'm trying to understand, why are they, first of all, so uncoordinated? Or why do they appear to be so uncoordinated in this government? Because I know Sally was trying to not quite answer the question, but I'm trying to understand why Buhari appoints Emefiele. Emefiele, according to news reports, even joined the APC. The legislature is made up of the APC. So why can't they just sit with the president and say, look, we need to speak to this man? Why are things concerning the CBN organized in this sort of dramatic manner when party members should be able to sit down and communicate with each other?
Thank you. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Now that's a quote that we'll all recognize from the late great Jino Achebe. And that's what you've got here. To sum it up, it's an arm wrestle, power show. We're getting to the crunch time. You know, this election is pivotal, you know, with there's a lot riding on it. We're all concerned for us as Nigerians, for the candidates, for everybody. And, you know, I've been talking to a number of people internationally, and it's they're starting to turn their attention towards us, which, of course, they would do. So I think you're right. It is uncoordinated. A lot of it doesn't make sense. Emefiele was reappointed by Buhari. Everybody expected that he would be shown the door when Buhari took over from Jonathan. He's the first CBN governor in I don't know how long, a couple of generations possibly, at least one, to be reappointed. He seems to have wielded more power and influence than any other governor in recent times in terms of the things that he's delved into, the statements he's made, and he has had cover from the president all along the way. up until excuse me, this arrest warrant was issued, and I think that's when the spell was broken. The president was noticeably silent. There were rumors that Emefiele wasn't going to return to the country because he didn't feel safe. He has eventually returned. There have been a couple of standoffs where they've tried to arrest him. Then he's pictured with the president as if to say, you know, fences are mended. There have been statements attributed to people like the chief of the defense staff with regard to Emefiele, you know, shouldn't be subject to any arbitrary process. I mean, even to get the arrest warrant, the word on the street is that the DSS kind of shopped around various courts to try and get a judge to endorse what they were doing, when in fact they have the powers. If they really felt that he had done anything wrong, they could arrest him. Emefiele's case is a bit like Al Capone. Despite everything Al Capone did, he eventually went down for tax evasion because that's what they could get him on. And it was a case of, well, if we can get him on that and we can't get him on anything else, that'll have to do. I mean, as I said earlier on, Emefiele's sins are legion. There are plenty of scrolls that you could fill with the various things that he's done. He's got a lot of enemies. He's got enemies clearly in both parties. It was telling that Buhari didn't come to his rescue. It's still a mystery as to who sent the DSS after him in the first place. Then, of course, you know, he thumbs his nose at the legislature. That's been done before. He's refused to appear. I see Femi Gbajabiamila has gone as far as threatening him with arrest, that he'll direct the IGP, the Inspector General of Police, to go after him. And he quotes a section of the Constitution which allows him, enables him to do that. I dispute that he actually does have that power, but that's a whole other story. I don't think the Inspector General probably wants to touch it. So it's people fighting like cats in a sack. It's the closer we get to the election, the stakes are rising higher, and people will do whatever they feel they need to do to give themselves an advantage to win. And if they feel that there are people in their way, then they will go after those people. There is no, it's very hard to decipher what on earth is going on with Emefiele. As you said, you know, after denial after denial after denial about extending the deadline, they've extended it. I do agree in part with what Salihu said that you know, ordinary people are suffering because of the scarcity of the currency, but they're completely forgotten by these guys stomping around. And again, another saying, you know, when the elephants fight, it's the grass that suffers. And that's definitely the case. So I think perhaps as we get closer to the election or afterwards, some of this will become clearer as to who was doing what to whom and why. But at the moment, it just looks like a massive soap opera. And under normal circumstances, you know, you'd say, crikey, I'll just sit back, get some popcorn and watch and laugh. But, you know, these are serious matters. This is our country here. This is our future. This is our children and our grandchildren's future. And it is perplexing. It is worrying. And you do wonder where it will lead.
Thank you, Dotun. And let me come to Phoenix. Phoenix, you've heard what Salihu and Dotun have said. But in addition to that, I just want to ask, why is the APC particularly concerned? Because the general commentary is that, look, the PDP too has a reputation for engaging in electoral inducements. So that's what some people say. And this currency issue seems to be impacting all the parties. So it's not just the APC who won't have access to cash. The PDP too won't have access to cash in the elections. I'm not saying they intend to rig, but the question is, why is the APC the one wailing more than anybody else? Why isn't the PDP, why doesn't the PDP seem bothered by this issue?
Well, I think I don't think we can say that the PDP isn't bothered, but I think they decided to, I think it was more prudent for them not to show their hand. In the sense that let it be, because of course, in as much as, and this particular election, I mean, before now, we know that there have been those who have tried to lump the PDP and the APC together. And the PDP has always pushed back against that, you know, that seeing both of them in the same light. But you're right. I mean, PDP has always also been accused of playing the same game. But this election, more than any other, has created that dichotomy of, oh, the big two versus the people. And so being able to extricate themselves from that has been more difficult. So, of course, it made more sense for them, especially as the APC candidate and his proxies were making this about them, to try to seem as if, well, we can't be bothered either way. I mean, we're fine. It's your policy. We'll roll with it, that kind of thing. But let's not forget, the PDP presidential candidate actually filmed a video, you know, to talk about it and ask the government to extend the deadline, ostensibly because it was impacting the ordinary folk. So yes, I mean, to my mind, there's enough for us to say that they have been worried, but they've tried to play it quiet. I think they've done well in playing it that way because it's deflected attention away from them and onto the APC. And they've been able to play under the radar at least until this video came out. And, you know, they can also spin it now and say, oh, the video came out and then the extension happened because they were calling for the common man. It's election season and all of these things will remain interesting for us to see. I mean, when we talk about the National Assembly and the attempt to have Emefiele arrested, you have to just look to the origins of the people who are of the main actors of this entire drama. The person who threatened to issue the arrest warrant is the Speaker of the National Assembly and of the House of Reps, Gbajabiam Miller, who we know is, if you want to say somebody's a proxy for Tinubu, there's no better description. I mean, this guy owes his political fortunes to BAT, and so we know whose bidding he's doing. So all of this circles back to, you know, the way they've all viewed this policy as something that is detrimental to their ability to win, and knowing no other way, they've tried to push back and try to make sure. I would not be surprised if this is further extended again until end of February. I mean, so let's brace ourselves and see how this pans out. But, you know, it's all very hilarious to me because the moment that this was announced, I had said that this was bad timing, simply because we're in election season and you knew that this was going to create more chaos. Not because, I mean, we know, let's make no mistake about it. I do not believe that if Tinubu needs cash, he won't get it. The guy is too connected to have that problem. This is all just about, creating this siege mentality and creating this. This is a guy, I keep saying it, this is a guy whose electoral path is difficult and needs to create as much chaos, be out there in the news, whip up the base, do everything that is necessary to win. And so this is all part of the game. And people just need to be aware of it. And you will see that continue to play out over the next month as we go into the election proper. It's going to get more interesting and you see more things begin to happen.
Thank you, Phoenix. But our time is up. So first of all, I must thank all our two guests. Thank you, Salihu, and Dotun for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here. Thank you, Phoenix, for co-hosting. And last but not least, I say thank you to our listeners for always giving us helpful feedback. But until same time next week, I say have a fantastic 7 days to everyone.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Salu. Thank you, Dotun. Thank you, listeners. PVC collection was also extended, if I remember correctly. So please, still out there, go and try and get your PVCs. And as I said before, I mean, these elections will hold, and it's important that people turn out and make sure that their voices are heard. Don't let any of the shenanigans by the political parties, you know, dissuade you or distract you from coming out to carry out your civic duty. That is more important now than it has ever been before. So come out, those elections will hold, and your votes will count, and the technology will work as it was designed. Thanks, everyone. Have a great week ahead.